Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. The toll-free number for the U.S. only is 877-876-5227, and if you're ringing in Canada, please ring 888-810-8322. Otherwise, please ring 530-876-3222. I'm available for private consultations as a clairvoyant medium, as well as for spiritual and grief counseling and near-death support. I also would like to encourage you to help support the program by making donations and sponsoring a show. For more information, please visit towardthelight.org. This week, I am very pleased and honored to have a special guest and friend who is the author of a tremendous book entitled Surviving Death, and he's a bit of a neighbor of mine as he does live here in Middle Tennessee. Welcome, Scott Degenhart. How are you, Scott?
Great. How about you, Juliet?
Very well, thank you. It's wonderful to be talking with you again, and I know that you've been quite busy and dealing with a lot of transition yourself, as many people are this year. And one thing that is really interesting to me is that I know that when people have written books or they've been on television or what have you, there's always some significant experiences that bring people to this point. So I know you had a powerful out-of-body experience and a very powerful encounter with your father. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what led to your authoring Surviving Death?
Yeah, you might say that it's probably one of the key beginnings of, I guess, what you would call the quest that a lot of us get on in search of their true belief. And in my case, mine, I always find hard to fit into a category. I didn't have a near-death experience. However, I completely experienced my father's death while he was making the transition. What had happened, my father in 1982, on his 45th birthday, was diagnosed with terminal cancer and was given 90 days to live, and he lived 100. And on that 100th day, that night, he was in a coma, dying in St. Thomas Hospital. The moment he passed on, he came by to visit me about 20 miles away where I was. I was sleeping at my mother's house, about 20 miles from the hospital where he was at. And when he entered the room, here's where the experience really departs probably from what most people, when they encounter their deceased relatives. In my case, I sat up to greet him, immediately recognizing that it was my father, and many things were taking place at the time, which I'll get into in a second. But when I say I sat up, I realized later that I actually had sat up out of my body.
Now, were you asleep, or were you... You'd gone to bed, obviously. You asleep already, or were you still awake?
Yeah, I had just drifted off to sleep.
Okay.
It was around 11 o'clock when I went to bed, and I lie there in bed mulling over, you know, my dad had hours to live. How were we going to react when the news came? That's all that, you know, I had said my goodbyes about a day and a half prior, right before he entered the coma, or actually he had just entered the coma, and never expected to see him again. This was not something I dreamt up or wished to happen or, you know, conjured up or whatever. This was complete unsolicited, my father coming into the room. And I would assume that because of the fact I was out of my body, that made this experience much more lucid, because when he came in the room, the very first thing that I recognized was that it was my father. I knew immediately it wasn't some other ghost. It was a white misty vapor type spirit energy form that, you know, you hear people describe that is, you know, exactly what his appearance looked like, only his face was about 10 years younger, probably. But the other thing that was happening was that I had a connection to him that was telepathic in the fact that I could feel everything he was feeling, and I'm sure likewise he could feel my feelings and emotions. But the feelings that were just rushing into me was, number one, I could feel the freshness of him having just left his body. I knew that at that moment he had just died. I could feel the shedding of the physical body. I mean, it's like I could feel the feeling of dying.
So you were being very empathic with him, actually, in that moment.
Right. I could feel this depth of peace and well-being that can't be described in earthly life. It was unbelievable amount of well-feeling, which was so in contrast to the last time I saw him. They were sucking fluids off of his lungs. He was in extremely excruciating pain, and it wasn't pleasant to look at, you know. So the other thing that struck me was the dichotomy of how well he was.
Well, it is also very typical when someone is presenting him or herself from the other side, they will actually look younger or present themselves in typically what would have been their prime in life,
yeah,
or their happiest in life, or their most fulfilling moments in life and that sort of thing. So I'm not surprised at all that he presented himself to you looking a lot younger.
It was really an expression of his vibrant self. I mean,
yes,
he looked very full of life, and was
indeed
very full of life.
Indeed.
Yeah. And so then, after the initial greeting, and he came and sort of what I call hovered by the left side of my shoulder of where I was in bed, it was at about that time that I looked down and saw my body laying there asleep, because I started questioning the experience. I said, "How? All right, I accept the fact that here's my father, and I know that my father just died. How could I be conversing with him unless I were dead also?" And at that point, I started to become frightened, absolutely scared out of my mind. I started looking around the room, looking at my body. I started being scared. How am I going to get back in my body? And at that moment, it's interesting that as my attention detracted from the wonderful reunion, I started losing contact with him and could no longer feel his feelings in him. I was almost so caught up in this fear that I had lost contact for a brief moment. But I got control of myself, and then I did one of the coolest things that I've ever done. I thought, okay, I'm realizing that I'm seeing wherever I simply direct my attention. I said, if that's the case, I'll bet that I can see 360 degrees around the entire room just because I want to. And I did it. I was able to, in one view, see the entire room. At that point, I sort of relaxed. My father was still there. We reconnected. Then it gets even more interesting. A connection or tunnel opened up off to the upper right, off into the distance, and I could feel what I say is I didn't really see the beings, but I could feel and hear people talking on the other side of this connection, and I could feel the other place on the other side that most people describe in their near-death experience as, you know, what they call heaven. It's just on the other side. I could feel this higher order plane of existence. And on the end of that other end opening of the tunnel were two beings that I call angels. They were somehow, they were overseers of this whole thing, whether one of them was my father's guardian angel, that was with him through life, I'm not sure, but there was a discussion going on about the situation, about him talking with me and all that. And one of them said something to him, which I didn't hear, but I saw him look up that way, and he looked back at me and said, "They're calling me now, and I have to go." And he said it with such mission in his voice, and I was so excited, instead of sad, I was like, "Yeah, you know, go." And he whisked off in that direction up that tunnel. The tunnel immediately snapped closed. I was immediately back in my body, and then the phone rang, and it was the hospital calling to tell us that he had just died. And my mom came in to give me the news, and I told her, I said, "Well, I know he just died. He was just here. And by the way, he's doing great."
How did she respond to that?
Well, it was one of those double-take moments in life where I even jumped back, kind of stepped back and said, "What did I just say?" She actually never doubted me for a moment because of the matter-of-factness, I guess. I mean, she saw the sincerity with what I said. She never doubted it. She was pretty much the only family member that embraced what I said with any glimmer of possibly being real. The rest of my family, after about a week of me trying to share this experience with everybody so that they would be as happy as I was, tried to institutionalize me. And so I had to promise them I would never speak of it again.
Oh, for goodness sake. And, now, what year was this, Scott?
This was 1982. This was May, beginning of June of 1982.
Actually, that was the founding of IAMS, too, so you know, in a lot of ways, these things were still kind of under wraps, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, I'm still surprised that people would try to institutionalize you. Because, and also the fact that, you know, when you, a few moments ago, you were saying, "Oh, if I'm communicating with him, I must be dead." Well,
yeah.
Not so, because mediums like me are communicating all the time.
Right.
And it's everything, as you probably have learned by now, is telepathic.
Yeah.
And that's what
was
happening.
That's the true form of communication.
The most organic and pure form of communication,
right.
And accurate.
Yeah, and what I've found is that through physical existence, like in my book, what I describe, the best analogy I've found is, it's like when you go to sleep at night and you're laying on your arm and you cut off the blood flow circulation to your arm and your arm goes to sleep, that if you live a predominantly physical existence and allow yourself to be inundated by the five senses, you put that, what we call the sixth sense, to sleep, even though it's a natural part of your normal communication. However, you'll put it to sleep.
Well, that is a good analogy, because as has been discussed on this program a number of times, unfortunately, people are taught when they are young to disregard anything having to do with intuition or
right.
Fantasy or what have you, and it turns out that it's not really fantasy at all, but really tapping into and receiving and experiencing communication. So that's, you know, that's why this kind of information does
yeah.
need to come out.
Right.
And when you... Now, you said you were only partially out of your body,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, I looked down. This was how I realized I was out of my body, was that as I was questioning myself how I was communicating so clearly and telepathically with my deceased father, as almost as if I was one of the dead, you know, is the way it felt. It was mm-hmm. just, I was so otherworldly at that moment. The clearness of thinking was just... There were lots of things that were noticeably different. So as I was questioning what was going on, I looked down and saw that from my waist down, I was in my body. And from my waist up, I was out of my body. I even examined my arms and looked at them. I could see through I looked just like my dad from the waist up. I could see my energy form, clear, white, misty vapor type energy form. And I could see that from the waist up. I was sticking out of my body, and waist down I was in.
Very good. Yeah, and this is another way that people, including myself, have described what we actually look like in the spirit form. We don't really look like human beings in the spirit world. That is actually a holographic projection for the sake of recognition.
Right.
But your father projected himself in his best physical form to be a source of comfort to you and to convey to you that he was quite more than all right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that, you know, that this is a really, really important message, because when people do cross over, generally speaking, they are very well off. It's the ones left behind that, need to have a little bit concern towards them, because they start to suffer and experience grief and that sort of thing. But it feels to me, by the fact that your father presented himself to you at the moment of his transitioning, that he was able to imbue you with great peace of mind and confidence.
Oh, yeah.
That you knew in no uncertain terms, my father is fine.
It was an experience that literally for about 2 weeks after the experience, I was still literally buzzing and vibrating.
Oh, I can believe it.
It was like I was on some incredibly electric high of some sort.
Well, actually, I'm feeling it with you even as I'm sitting here and as you were describing. You know, I was prepared to hear you say, and to my left, and then to my right. I was seeing to the right even before you said that, the portal that opened up to the other side.
Well, you know what was, what I find interesting about all of these types of experience, spiritual experiences, too, is the memory of it is as clear as if it were happening right now in front of me. It's like it's a different kind of memory, and it is just as lucid now as it was, 24 years ago now.
Well, that's the interesting point that we've made about having these experiences, whether they're near-death, out-of-body, or spiritually transformative experiences, that separates them completely from a hallucination, because you do not have the same kinds of memory and experiences, and even bringing back that lucidity, because I also, when I think about my near-death experiences and my OBEs as well, they're still so clear. And, you know, if these were hallucinations, there's no way that this clarity, this memory could have recurred at all. Nor the ability to still continue to communicate or function in a very clear, mannered, coherent way.
Yeah.
So when you are having an OBE or NDE, you're still very clear, but when you're hallucinating, that's something entirely different. So after this experience, and I'm sure that it had to have been heartbreaking for you when people were trying to declare you as crazy and thinking that you needed to be committed and all that nonsense, what did you do with all of that?
Well, the first, what I might say, the first major test of the experience, you might say, came about 2 days later at the visitation of the body, what my dad left behind. And we went to the Catholic church where his body was for viewing for the family and stuff. And when I to this day never forget when I walked into the room where the casket was, and the entranceway was about halfway between where the people to my right were sitting and standing mourning. To my left was the open casket, and when I glanced over and looked at that casket, I looked over at the people that were sitting there crying in front of, staring at this hunk of leftover molecular residue, I almost erupted in loud laughter, because I could see right through the body and see how absolutely meaningless it was.
Yes.
That wasn't my father. He wasn't even there. In fact, he was very far away from where that was and had nothing to do with it anymore. Yet all these people were sitting there focused on that and crying. It was absurdly funny to me. And fortunately, I did not erupt in laughter because it probably would have brought on the guys with the straight jackets and the white coats probably a lot sooner. But I spent, like I said, several days trying to pass on this comfort to the other people to realize, you know, man, he is, you just would not believe how good he's doing. And but then I resolved myself at that point, with the limited knowledge I had of spiritual things at that point, I resolved myself to this conclusion. I said, okay, number one, I really don't care what anybody thinks about it. I really don't care what anybody says. I personally was there. I know it was real. I experienced my father's transition to the hereafter firsthand. I now know what that's like, and I now know how wonderful that is, you know, not to be afraid of death anymore. But for some reason, it must have been a glitch in the Windows operating system of the universe, and I'm just going to put it to bed, never talk about it again, and leave it at that. And so I did that for 9 years, never spoke of it again to anybody, until I was at church. I was walking down the hallway, and I'm reading bulletin boards, and I come across a newspaper article by friend of mine by the name of John Rahner, who was publishing his first book, Do You Have a Guardian Angel? And in this book review, there was a kind of in different snippets out of the book, and one of them was people claiming to have talked to their deceased family. And I'll just never forget getting carpet burns on the bottom of my jaw when it hit the floor, seeing that other people had been through this, because I had never in the 9 years heard a single person talk about an encounter with a deceased family member. So I accosted John in the hallway and said, I'm coming to your house tonight, and you're going to hear me. And I went over there and spent an hour and a half in explicit detail, not missing a single detail of the whole experience with my dad, and then said, okay, so now what do you think about that? And he looked at me and just said, well, that's actually rather common. And I set out to disprove him, only to prove him right, that it is rather common.
Well, unfortunately, I think during all of that time you were in Nashville, right? And so,
Murfreesboro, yeah.
Yeah, in the Nashville area, in Nashville, Tennessee. So unfortunately, I think, I mean, even myself, a few people have still had to keep it a little bit under wraps because of, you know, either being threatened by men in white jackets or people declaring that we're demon possessed,
oh, yeah,
or what have
right.
you, which is so silly. And
yeah.
This is why this work is here, to help prove that none of that could possibly be true. Because again, we're talking about telepathy, we're talking about different frequencies, and your father simply moved to a higher frequency, and you were able to move into that frequency with him for a little while, which is wonderful. There's no reason why we can't. Even whilst we are still in a physical body, we can move into these higher frequencies and have after-death communications, or ADCs. Have you had recurring experiences with your father?
Not with my father. Well, no, I take that back. I've had one. I was there at the passing of his sister about, this would have been about 5 years ago. And knowing what I know now, at that time when I was with the family in Chicago, we were, my cousin, which was the daughter of my father's dying sister, cousin and I were sitting down in the basement area of my uncle's house, and in that basement area is what we call the Hall of Hats, or some 500 ball caps that he's collected from all over the world, different
thing. Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah. And so she was on her deathbed. She had had 9 strokes in about a 2-day period. The CAT scan had estimated she only had 25% of her brain left.
Wow.
And so, you know, we knew she was soon to pass on. And so as I'm there, I'm comforting my cousin and the other cousins and the other people there, saying that, you know, don't be surprised if you're visited by, for instance, my dad or grandma and grandpa, who have also passed on, because it is common at death for the previously deceased to escort the newly deceased to the next realm to
yes,
help them out.
Absolutely.
We call takeaway apparitions is one of the names given them. So no sooner had I been sitting there telling my cousin Cindy this, when all of a sudden one of the hats jumped off the hook right in front of me. Actually, 2 of the hats. I take that back. There were 2 hats. Now, out of 500 hats, 2 of them jumped off the hook. I picked them up, looked at them. It was an Air Force and a Marine hat. Okay, the significance of that is that my dad was in the Air Force and the Marines.
Ooh.
4 years in each. And so I hung the hats back up on the hook, only to have them jump off again. So we both looked at each other and knew my dad was saying hi.
Yes, indeed.
but that's the only indirect encounter I've had with him since. I've had lots of other encounters that go well into that realm, too. That's the last time, you might say, I'd known that he was passing through.
That is really interesting. And how did your cousin respond to that?
Oh, of course we were, both just about in tears, both of joy and sadness, knowing
mm-hmm.
that her mom was getting ready to die. But it was very comforting, very, very comforting to know that not only was my dad there, but most likely Reuben and Alice, his parents, which is also the parents of the dying, that she didn't die alone.
Exactly. And nobody ever does, to be honest. No one ever dies alone. Even though on the physical plane they might appear to be alone,
right,
there's always a gentle hand there to help one and to help one transition to the other side. And again, I want to remind our listeners that we are having a wonderful transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to this source. And I want to invite you once again to visit our website, which is towardthelight.org. And if you would like to ring in with any questions, please ring 877-876-5227 in America. In Canada, you can ring 888-810-8322. Anywhere else on our beautiful planet, please ring 530-876-3222. Now, getting back, I would like to ask you what brought about the writing of your book, Surviving Death. Obviously, this has been very important to you.
Yeah, it came about actually back in that meeting with John Rahner and not really so much to try and prove him wrong, but to set out to prove right or wrong. Does this happen to other people?
So in other words, you were still uncertain that other people had ADCs?
Yeah. Because I had, at that point I was in my 30s, and at that point, since I had never heard anybody talk anything remotely close to the number of things I went through. I mean, it was just so detailed what I went through I wanted to find out for myself, but also wanted in some ways to help other people that had been through it. And that's really what happened is that I spent the better part of the next couple of weeks, books were flying off the shelf. I was scooping up 2, 3, and 4 books at a time in the bookstore on near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, all of Raymond Moody's books, that type of thing. what's interesting, the book that made a difference, that brought about my book, Surviving Death, was written by your next week's guest, DMA Chatwater.
Okay, I thought you might be saying that.
what really opened my eyes was not all the books written by doctors about their patients with near-death experiences and how with rosy-colored glasses it made it look like the most enlightening and best thing a person could ever go through. I got her book and Coming Back to Life, and it was a book written by an experiencer, and the flavor and tone of it was so contrastingly different. I was taken aback by the troubles that she went through as a result of having this experience.
Oh, yes.
Loss of family, loss of friends, loss of jobs, very tumultuous, to say the least. And that struck a huge burden in my heart. It was like, well, I know what I went through, but I kind of didn't go through it very long because I renounced my position in having ever gone through this, you know, so I kind of avoided the years of trouble that she went through. But I thought, other people have probably gone through this, so I began to have a burden. I thought I would like to start a group meeting. I would like to get people together who have been through this to help them find each other, because they are probably the best people that can talk or share is those who have actually been through it and understand and not look at you with a funny face as you describe these otherworldly experiences. It's interesting that at the same time I had this burden, Demetria Kalodemus from Channel 4 News was putting together a documentary called Glimpse of Glory that featured people in the Middle Tennessee area who had had near-death experiences, because she had the same burden. After interviewing them, she realized these people need help. You know, I mean, she kind of told me on the phone one time as we were talking about it, she said, man, these people are messed up. They've got to talk to people. They have been oppressed. They've all this, you know, negative things that have happened in their life as a result of their near-death experience.
And when was that? Obviously, that was a long time before I ever arrived in Nashville,
right,
Illinois.
That would have been, I believe that's 1992,
okay.
I think. Summer of 92. I'll have to check back on that. But anyway, somewhere around that time, summer of 92, somewhere around there, I got a hold of Demetria and said, look, you're doing a documentary on something that I actually am trying to start a group for. Is there any way that, yes, it was summer 92, looking at my notes. Is there any way that that I can, you know, get these people together? Can you get me in contact with these people? And they ended up, they had 15 minutes to film the documentary, and that ended up being the last 15 minutes. They featured the very first group meeting of what I call the Survivors of Death Network. And so as a result of that meeting, what I discovered was is that all of us seem to have had less than a dozen of the same questions on our quest. And out of those questions was born what I determined I felt needed to be written, was what I call the owner's manual to the near-death experience. It was a book written not to convince the general public that these things are real, but written to the experiencer for them to be able to look to without a doubting tone and possibly be able to find some answers to their questions of those 10 or less questions, but also make a stepping stone for them in their quest to learn more. And so thus was born the book, Surviving Death, was intended to be, you know, an owner's manual and an encyclopedia of spiritual experiences, because it's not just near-death experience people, experiencers who are having these types of experience. Some 20% of the population has out-of-body experiences.
Oh, absolutely. And even more than that, I'd be willing to venture.
Yeah, the research shows around that, but there are, again, people like me who don't talk.
Yes.
Who didn't talk, you know. And the other Father Greeley, Andrew Greeley, if you've heard his name,
yes.
The Catholic priest, did extensive amounts of research into this whole thing. He has a whole website. If you want to read more statistics than you ever care to learn, go to his website. He did a survey of widows and widowers and found that in the case of widows and widowers, 67% have been visited by their deceased spouse within the first year of their passing.
And I'm one of them.
Okay.
Definitely. And another thing I'd like to let our listeners know, too, is that you can obtain a copy of Surviving Life, Surviving Death, excuse me. That was an oxymoron there, Surviving Physical Life. Surviving Death through my website, towardthelight.org. And what is your website? Also, Scott, we should share that with our listeners.
Sure, yeah. It's TheDegShop, TheDegShop.com. And if you can't remember that or get it written down, you can just type in any search engine, Surviving Death, Scott Degenhart, and it'll take you to it as well.
Okay, and also on my website, when people
yes.
go to your book, it's
That's
an automatic
right.
hot link to your
link
website as well. So
yeah.
you're covered all the way around there, and I'm really pleased to have your book because it's a great book. You've done some wonderful work in that book. Have you
14 years and over 100 experienced people who have actually been on the other side and back, or these other experiences went into that.
Yeah, I think you actually had a couple of blurbs from my NDE
yep.
in there as well.
That's exactly right.
So that's really good. Are you working on any other books, or what have you been up to in the past
year? Well, I do have two books in the back of my mind. One is a little bit more lighthearted to take a break from the intenseness of this one. That is going to be a collection of odd. I am a avid photographer, have been all my life, and so in the 45 years of my life now, I have collected some really bizarre, odd events, Kodak moments, you call them, in life. And I thought about putting those together as a book called What's Wrong With This Picture, and feature some of those. That is just an aside and something for fun to do, but My true second book that I'd really love to do, however, becomes a little bit harder to get data on this, is I would love to investigate and report on the dying and afterlife experiences of pets and animals, because I know they exist. I've had more than one person tell me about the encounter with their deceased pet while either out of body or during the near-death experience. And that, I think, to me, would be a fascinating add to the spiritual understanding of everything.
That would be wonderful, because there actually has been a lot of dialogue circulating lately about pets and deceased pets. And I, for one, have helped people connect with their deceased pets. And it is something that is, that can be done for sure.
Yeah.
And
I was personally visited about a month after I had to put my last dog down. And she came by to thank me. And, she was so happy. And one of the things that I've regretted so much was having to chain her up on the chain that she was on all of her life. And one of the things, all she ever wanted to do was just run free like the wind, which in society you can't do that, because of the leash laws and that kind of stuff. But she told me when she came by to see me, she said, now, and this is her exact word, she says, now I can run and run and run.
Yes.
And with that, she turned and darted off, and it was a very comforting experience.
I know that a lot of people have had issues about having their pets put down, and yet straight away I was able to feel them being so grateful that they were released from the burden of their physical existence.
Yeah. It's no different than the human experience of departing from this physical body. It's such a, well, for instance, my father, what I felt of his leaving the physical body was a sense of like the genie out of the bottle that had been stuck in that bottle for thousands of years. It was this release from like eternal servitude to that body, slavery or bondage or whatever you want to call it, that it was so for the freedom that he was feeling is the only words I can kind of put it in, but I could feel that emotion or feeling that he was feeling of the release from that body.
Well, he was feeling utterly liberated. That's a beautiful metaphor, actually, because I think of that too, just, being released from the physical body, and of course, having been to the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a profound freedom that just does not exist on the physical plane. So, genie in the bottle, that's beautiful. Now, I would like to ask you about your photography. Have you been able to photograph some of these spirit forms or orbs or something that one might not necessarily be able to see on the physical plane?
You know, I've never tried, but that could be something that I should get into with all the equipment I have.
I'm going to give you some homework then, friend.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. But, I mean, I have seen some photographs people have taken, and they do not surprise me because what they imaged was exactly what I saw my father look like, you know.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And the energy form and all that. So none of that really surprises me when people come up with that. Now, I do not doubt, I'm not saying that they're all haven't been forged. I guarantee you there's forgeries out there, but I do know that if that does exist, it does happen, you know.
Well, actually, I had a guest on my show a few weeks back, Mary Sutherland from BurlingtonNews.net.
Mm-hmm.
She's done some amazing work with being able to do multidimensional photography. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a reporter from her local newspaper went out onto the site with her, used his own camera,
mm-hmm.
and was able to get the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about being very open and receptive.
Mm-hmm.
And not being a doubting Thomas, as it were, and just sort of allowing yourself to see these things and to photograph them, because they really do exist, and I've seen some, she's got some brilliant photographs on her site.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when you were talking about doing this, I think that this would be some wonderful additions to your book.
Yeah.
You might even invite your folder, since he loves to. I really sense that he could be quite a bit of a prankster.
Oh, he was. He was a practical joker in his physical plane existence. That's one of the things I probably inherited from him was a sense of humor, because he loved plays on words. He loved practical jokes. It won't surprise me whatever surprises he has still in store for us here.
Well, and you know, the thing when you were talking about the hat popping off the wall.
Yeah.
This is so commonplace.
Yeah, it would be.
And
yeah.
It doesn't only happen with people on the other side. I've actually had this experience from people who are still on the physical side of life, but telepathically, they're just wanting to get something through me so strongly that something will fly off the wall, like a picture of them.
Yeah.
You know, even though they're still on the physical plane. So that's another point that, you know, that we've tried to make with people, is that this doesn't happen with just deceased people, but also people still on the physical plane, because again, we're talking about telepathy and a higher frequency of communication.
Yeah, and like I was describing to somebody the other day, okay, if you think that the internet is a cool connection of the one side of the planet to the other, it doesn't match the spiritual network that weaves through everything that can be tapped into for understanding, for peace, for well-being, and for connecting to other people, that it's there all the time around us. You know, one of the biggest fallacies for organized religion is they have you to think that the Creator, you have to look up to where the Creator is, whereas it is a thread of energy that runs through all of creation.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that, because that is a tough one. And in fact, I was telling somebody the other day, God isn't up in the sky somewhere, you know, or someone that you love who's on the other side. It's all around us at all times.
Yep.
And the light source isn't far and away somewhere. I guess we think of the beauty of the sky, so it's natural that we want to look up. Why not? You know, enjoy the sunset. Thank you very much.
Right.
But the fact is that the light force is in and through everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Right.
And we don't need mentors and mediators, although sometimes, you know, a medium like me can come
help
in a little bit handy when somebody's arm is still asleep, as it were, like
there you
were
go
saying.
There
but I always tell people, you can do this too, because we've all got this God-given ability to do this. It's just that you've got to work that muscle.
You know? I'll share with you an experience that happened.
Please.
That you know, most people would have a hard time understanding. I have not shared this with many people. Back in the early 90s, there was a 8-year-old and a 5-year-old brother in the Nashville area that disappeared one day. And there
so
was
both brothers disappeared?
Yeah, same
okay
day. There was, of course, a citywide child hunt, manhunt, because it was not known whether they were abducted. And, you know, the first 24 or 48 hours is the most critical in an abduction. And so there was just pandemonium. Searching is in the news constantly about these two brothers. And at that time, I had my kids were about a year and a half old, and becoming aware of some of the negative things that take place out there, one of them, of course, being the child porn industry and how sometimes kids are abducted for this particular industry. And I had, at the time, when I kept hearing about them missing, that's all that was running through my head, and I got angrier and angrier that someone could possibly do something like that. And I was in the shower, and I was praying in the shower very, very, very intently. I was bordering angry, but so emotional over this whole thing that I was very distraught, because I was very empathetic because of my own young children. I just could feel for these parents and was very angry, and I was praying evilness on the abductors and all this other stuff, you know, when all of a sudden I was no longer in the shower. I was actually standing in a very, very bright white light. It was the Creator. And He told me, first of all, you know, lots of peace streaming from Him, and He told me, his exact words was, He said, the two brothers are in me right now. And He showed them to me, and I saw them running around happy as could be. And then He said, and their bodies will not be found until they are floating. And then, boom, I was back in the shower again.
Wow.
I was just like staggering. I was so taken aback by the experience. But I didn't know what it meant. I didn't tell anybody about it because, I didn't call the police and say, by the way, their bodies won't be found until they're floating, and they are dead. So it was a week later that it came on the news that the body of the first one was found floating in the Cumberland River, and it was a few hours later the body of the second one was found floating in the Cumberland River. So that what had happened was, now they surmise that the younger brother had gone, slipped into the river, the older one jumped in to try and save him, and they both drowned.
That's what I was getting when you shared the experience that you had, what the light source told you. I just thought, aha, they drowned and it was an accident. They
yeah
were not abducted.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was. That was quite an experience.
And you know what? I think that with something like this, I'm hoping that, again, through radio programs like this one, through the books that are circulating, through the many lectures and everything that is being conveyed about telepathy and the fact that we are multidimensional beings, hopefully when something like this happens, that people won't be so frightened to come forward and say, I've just had a vision about something. You might want to follow through with this because it could actually save a life. And I know that this has certainly been the case in my life, that honoring an intuitive notation about something that I had to act upon has literally been a real lifesaver. You know, and again, this is not fantasy. This is not losing our marbles or anything like that. It's not bullocks. It's absolutely real.
And that's the point of our groups, that the meetings that both you and I have had.
Yes. Now, how long did your meetings last, Scott?
3 years. We met for 3 years, and it was one of those things where it grew, and then it waned. And I knew the meetings were over when people stopped showing up. But not that there's not a demand everywhere for it. I'm telling you, there are still people who go through these experiences every day. I live across the street from a nurse that works at the local hospital in the intensive care and in the emergency room, and they see this stuff every day. She's got plenty of stories to tell of witnessing these types of things. So,
well, I hope you'll tell her about Toward the Light and about all of this work. And what I would like to do, too, and I would like to invite comments and feedback from our listeners, is that I am thinking of implementing a teleconference meeting so that people all over the world and not just in one local area can get together at a specific time via telephone and have a very safe meeting conversation via telephone about their experiences and ask questions. So if something like this resonates with you or interests you, I'd like to invite you to send an email about it, and you can send an email to info@towardthelight.org. Scott, are you thinking of maybe facilitating any more groups, or are you just not feeling so cold right now?
Well, I'm would love to be a part of a group. I would not be able to head one up due to my current employment status with the X-ray machine that I'm helping develop out of Vanderbilt University that we have just possibly landed a big contract with Boeing aircraft and all that, and that will limit my free time. But
well, I think we can probably do the virtual meeting through the telephone, and hopefully you'll join us for that.
And I think that I think it's a good thing. And I'm trying to find out where I've recently moved to here. I've just learned this past week that there is actually a meeting of a group of spiritual people who get together to share somewhat similar spiritual experiences, and I'm not exactly sure of the details yet, and I'm waiting to hear back from one person on that, too, that would be interesting to see if this dovetails with a Friends of Ion type topical meeting, you know.
Well, that's really exciting to hear about. We are getting ready to sign off here in a moment, but I would like to ask you if there's any special events or anything coming up that you would like to share with our audience this evening.
Other than, I wish I had the details. This particular organization is called IONS, and they work with the Edgar Cayce group.
Oh, the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Okay, I know.
Not to be confused with IANS, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know in November they have their big annual conference coming up, so you can go to, I'm not exactly sure yet if it's the Edgar Cayce website. Again, this is information I'm trying to find out, but that I'm very interested in learning more about.
Well, you can do a Google search. I'm trying to remember the Institute of Noetic Sciences website as well, but if you just put I-O-N-S into the search engine, it will come up. And there are actually a couple of URLs for the Edgar Cayce group, and I've actually got it on my website too. So just do a Google for Edgar Cayce, or you can also look at towardthelight.org under Kindred Spirits and find that information. And also, again, you can find Scott Degenhardt's book and his information on my website, towardthelight.org. And again, Scott, your website is thedegshop.com, correct?
That's right.
Okay, and D-E-G is the first part of your surname, just for reference sake, thedegshop.com. Well, it has really, really been wonderful to talk with you and to share these experiences together, and I'm sure we could go on for hours. It's so interesting, but it's really been a joy, and I want to invite everyone to join us next week when we will again have PMH Atwater as a special guest, and we are going to be talking about the events that happened during 11 September and what happens on the other side. So I hope that you will join us next week. And until then, please do remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.